Chapter 4 Computer. Harlan had been 2 years a technician when he re-entered the 482nd for the first time since leaving with Twissell. He found it almost unrecognizable. It had not changed. He had. 2 years of technicianhood had meant a number of things. In one sense, it had increased his feeling of stability. He had no longer to learn a new language, get used to new styles of clothing and new ways of life with every new observation project. On the other hand, it had resulted in a withdrawal on his own part. He had almost forgotten now the camaraderie that united all the rest of the specialists in Eternity. Most of all, he had developed the feeling of the power of being a technician. He held the fate of millions in his fingertips. And if one must walk lonely because of it, one could also walk proudly. So he could stare coldly at the communications man behind the entry desk of the 482nd and announce himself in clipped syllables. Andrew Harlan, technician, reporting to Computer Finge for temporary assignment to the 482nd, disregarding the quick glance from the middle-aged man he faced. It was what some people called the technician glance, a quick, involuntary sidelong peek at the rose-red shoulder emblem of the technician, then an elaborate attempt not to look at it again. Harlan stared at the other's shoulder emblem. It was not the yellow of the computer, the green of the life plotter, the blue of the sociologist, or the white of the observer. It was not the specialist's solid color at all. It was simply a blue bar on white. The man was communications. A sub-branch of maintenance, not a specialist at all. And he gave the technician glance, too. Harlan said a little sadly, "Well?" Communications said quickly, "I'm ringing Computer Finch, sir." Harlan remembered the 482nd as solid and massive, but now it seemed almost squalid. Harlan had grown used to the glass and porcelain of the 575th. To its fetish of cleanliness. He had grown accustomed to a world of whiteness and clarity, broken by sparse patches of light pastel. The heavy plaster swirls of the 482nd, its splashy pigments, its areas of painted metal, were almost repulsive. Even Finge seemed different, less than life-size, somewhat. 2 years earlier, to Observer Harlan, Finge's every gesture had seemed sinister and powerful. Now, from the lofty and isolated heights of technicianhood, the man seemed pathetic and lost. Harlan watched him as he leafed through a sheaf of foils and got ready to look up, with the air of someone who is beginning to think he has made his visitor wait the duly required amount of time. Finge was from an energy-centered century in the 600s. Twissell had told him that, and it explained a good deal. Finge's flashes of ill temper could easily be the result of the natural insecurity of a heavy man used to the firmness of field forces and unhappy to be dealing with nothing more than flimsy matter. His tiptoeing walk, Harlan remembered Finge's cat-like tread well. Often he would look up from his desk, see Finge standing there staring at him, his approach, having been unheard, was no longer something sly and sneaking, but rather the fearful and reluctant tread of one who lives in the constant, if unconscious, fear that the flooring would break under his weight. Harlan thought, with a pleasant condescension, "The man is poorly adjusted to the section. Reassignment is probably the only thing that would help him." Finge said, "Greetings, Technician Harlan."
"Greetings, computer," said Harlan.
Finge said, "It seems that in the 2 years since..."
"Two physio years," said Harlan.
Finge looked up in surprise. "Two physio years, of course."
In Eternity, there was no time as one ordinarily thought of time in the universe outside. But men's bodies grew older, and that was the unavoidable measure of time, even in the absence of meaningful physical phenomena. Physiologically, time passed, and in a physio year within Eternity, a man grew as much older as he would have in an ordinary year in time. Yet, even the most pedantic Eternal remembered the distinction only rarely. It was too convenient to say, "See you tomorrow," or "I missed you yesterday," or "I will see you next week," as though there were a tomorrow, or a yesterday, or a last week in any but a physiological sense. And the instincts of humanity were catered to by having the activities of eternity tailored to an arbitrary 24 physio-hour day, with a solemn assumption of day and night, today and tomorrow. Finch said, "In the two physio years since you left, a crisis has gradually gathered about the 482nd, a rather peculiar one, a delicate one, almost unprecedented. We need accurate observation now as we never have needed it before."
"And you want me to observe?"
"Yes. In a way, it's a waste of talent to ask a technician to do a job of observation, but your previous observations, for clarity and insight, were perfect. We need that again. Now I'll just sketch in a few details."
What those details were, Harlan was not to find out just then. Finch spoke, but the door opened, and Harlan did not hear him. He stared at the person who entered. It was not that Harlan had never seen a girl in eternity before. Never was too strong a word. Rarely, yes, but not never. But a girl such as this, and in eternity. Harlan had seen many women in his passages through time, but in time they were only objects to him, like walls and balls, barrows and harrows, kittens and mittens. They were facts to be observed. In eternity, a girl was a different matter, and one like this. She was dressed in the style of the upper classes of the 482nd, which meant transparent sheathing and not very much else above the waist, and flimsy, knee-length trousers below. The latter, while opaque enough, hinted delicately at gluteal curves. Her hair was glossily dark and shoulder-length, her lips redly penciled thin above and full below in an exaggerated pout. Her upper eyelids and her earlobes were tinted a pale rose, and the rest of her youthful, almost girlish face was a startlingly milky white. Jeweled pendants descended forward from mid-shoulder to tinkle now this side, now that, of the graceful breasts to which they drew attention. She took her seat at a desk in the corner of Finch's office, lifting her eyelashes only once to sweep her dark glance across Harlan's face. When Harlan heard Finch's voice again, the computer was saying, "You'll get all this in an official report, and meanwhile, you can have your old office and sleeping quarters." Harlan found himself outside Finch's office without quite remembering the details of his leaving. Presumably, he had walked out. The emotion within him that was easiest to recognize was anger. By time, Finch ought not to be allowed to do this. It was bad for morale. It made a mockery. He stopped himself, unclenched his fist, unclamped his jaw. "Let's see now." His footsteps sounded sharply in his own ear as he strode firmly toward the communications man behind the desk. Communications looked up without quite meeting his eye and said cautiously, "Yes, sir?" Harlan said, "There's a woman at a desk in Computer Finch's office. Is she new here?" He had meant to ask it casually. He had meant to make it a bored, indifferent question. It rang out instead like a pair of cymbals clashing. But it roused communications. The look in his eye became something that made all men kin. It even embraced the technician, drew him in as a fellow. Communications said, "You mean the babe? Wow, isn't she built like a force field latrine, though?" Harlan stammered a bit. "Just answer my question." Communications stared, and some of his steam evaporated. He said, "She's new. She's a timer."
"What's her job?"
A slow smile crept over communication's face and grew into a leer.
"She's supposed to be the boss's secretary. Her name is Noyes Lambent."
All right.
Harlan turned on his heel and left. Harlan's first observation trip into the 482nd came the next day, but it lasted for 30 minutes only. It was obviously only an orientation trip, intended to get him into the feel of things. He entered it for an hour and a half the next day, and not at all on the third. He occupied his time in working his way through his original reports, relearning his own knowledge, brushing up on the language system of the time, accustoming himself to the local costumes again. One reality change had hit the 482nd, but it was very minor. A political clique that had been in was now out, but there seemed no change in the society otherwise. Without quite realizing it, he slipped into the habit of searching his old reports for information on the aristocracy. Surely, he had made observations. He had, but they were impersonal, from a distance. His data concerned them as a class, not as individuals. Of course, his spatio-temporal charts had never demanded or even permitted him to observe the aristocracy from within. What the reasons for that might have been was beyond the purview of an observer. He was impatient with himself at feeling curiosity concerning that now. During those 3 days, he had caught glimpses of the girl, Noyes Lambent, 4 times. At first, he had been aware only of her clothes and her ornaments. Now he noticed that she was 5'6" in height, half a head shorter than himself, yet slim enough and with a carriage erect and graceful enough to give an impression of height. She was older than she first seemed, approaching 30 perhaps, certainly over 25. She was quiet and reserved, smiled at him once when he passed her in the corridor, then lowered her eyes. Harlan drew aside to avoid touching her, then walked on feeling angry. By the close of the third day, Harlan was beginning to feel that his duty as an Eternal left him only one course of action. Doubtless, her position was a comfortable one for herself. Doubtless, Finge was within the letter of the law, yet Finge's indiscretion in the matter, his carelessness, certainly went against the spirit of the law, and something should be done about it. Harlan decided that, after all, there wasn't a man in Eternity he disliked quite as much as Finge. The excuses he had found for the man only a few days before vanished. On the morning of the fourth day, Harlan asked for and received permission to see Finge privately. He walked in with a determined step and, to his own surprise, made his point instantly. "Computer Finge, I suggest that Miss Lambent be returned to time." Finge's eyes narrowed. He nodded toward a chair, placed clasped hands under his soft, round chin, and showed some of his teeth. "Well, sit down, sit down. You find Miss Lambent incompetent? Unsuitable?" "As to her incompetence and unsuitability, computer, I cannot say. It depends on the uses to which she is put, and I have put her to none. But you must realize that she is bad for the morale of this section." Finge stared at him distantly, as though his computer's mind were weighing abstractions beyond the reach of an ordinary Eternal. "In what way is she hurting morale, technician?"
"There is no real necessity for you to ask," said Harlan, his anger deepening. "Her costume is exhibitionistic. Her—"
"Wait, wait. Now wait a while, Harlan. You've been an observer in this era. You know her clothes are standard costume for the 482nd.
In her own surroundings, in her own cultural milieu, I would have no fault to find, though I'll say right now that her costume is extreme even for the 482nd. You'll allow me to be the judge of that. Here in Eternity, a person such as she is certainly out of place."
Finge nodded his head slowly. He actually seemed to be enjoying himself. Harlan stiffened. Finge said,
"She is here for a deliberate purpose. She is performing an essential function. It is only temporary. Try to endure her meanwhile."
Harlan's jaw quivered. He had protested and was being fobbed off. To hell with caution. He would speak his mind. He said, "I can imagine what the woman's essential function is. To keep her so openly will not be allowed to pass." He turned stiffly, walked to the door. Finge's voice stopped him.
"Technician," Finge said, "your relationship with Twistle may have given you a distorted notion about your own importance.
Correct that.
And meanwhile, tell me, technician, have you ever had a..."
He hesitated, seeming to pick among words.
"Girlfriend?"
With painstaking and insulting accuracy, back still turned, Harlan quoted, "In the interest of avoiding emotional entanglements with time, an eternal may not marry. In the interest of avoiding emotional entanglements with family, an eternal may not have children." The computer said gravely,
"I didn't ask about marriage or children."
Harlan quoted further, "Temporary liaisons may be made with timers only after application with the Central Charting Board of the All-Wen Council for an appropriate life plot of the timer concerned. Liaisons may be conducted thereafter only according to the requirements of specific spatio-temporal charting."
"Quite true. Have you ever applied for temporary liaison, technician?"
"No, computer."
"Do you intend to?"
"No, computer."
"Perhaps you ought to. It would give you a greater breadth of view. You would become less concerned about the details of a woman's costume, less disturbed about her possible personal relations with other Eternals."
Harlan left, speechless with rage. He found it almost impossible to perform his near-daily trek into the 482nd, the longest continuous period remaining something under 2 hours. He was upset, and he knew why.
Finge.
Finge and his coarse advice concerning liaisons with timers. Liaisons existed. Everyone knew that. Eternity had always been aware of the necessity for compromising with human appetites. To Harlan, the phrase carried a quivery repulsion. But the restrictions involved in choosing mistresses made the compromise anything but lax, anything but generous. And those who were lucky enough to qualify for such an arrangement were expected to be most discreet about it, out of common decency and consideration for the majority. Among the lower classes of Eternals, particularly among maintenance, there were always the rumors, half hopeful, half resentful, of women imported on a more or less permanent basis for the obvious reasons. Always, rumor pointed to the computers and life plotters as the benefiting groups. They, and only they, could decide which women could be abstracted from time without danger of significant reality change. Less sensational, and therefore less tongue-worthy, were the stories concerning the timer employees that every section engaged temporarily, when spatio-temporal analysis permitted, to perform the tedious tasks of cooking, cleaning, and heavy labor. But a timer, and such a timer, employed as secretary, could only mean that Finge was thumbing his nose at the ideals that made eternity what it was. Regardless of the facts of life to which the practical man of eternity made a perfunctory obeisance, it remained true that the ideal eternal was a dedicated man living for the mission he had to perform, for the betterment of reality and the improvement of the sum of human happiness. Harlan liked to think that eternity was like the monasteries of primitive times. He dreamed that night that he spoke to Twistle about the matter, and that Twistle, the ideal eternal, shared his horror. He dreamed of a broken Finge, stripped of rank. He dreamed of himself with the yellow computer's insignia, instituting a new regime in the 482nd, ordering Finge grandly to a new position in maintenance. Twistle sat next to him, smiling with admiration, as he drew up a new organizational chart, neat, orderly, consistent, and asked Noyes Lambent to distribute copies. But Noyes Lambent was nude, and Harlan woke up, trembling and ashamed. He met the girl in a corridor one day and stood aside, eyes averted, to let her pass. But she remained standing, looking at him, until he had to look up and meet her eyes. She was all color and life, and Harlan was conscious of a faint perfume about her. She said,
"You're Technician Harlan, aren't you?"
His impulse was to snub her, to force his way past, but, after all, he told himself, all this wasn't her fault. Besides, to move past her now would mean touching her. So he nodded briefly. "Yes."
"I'm told you're quite an expert on our time."
"I have been in it."
"I would love to talk to you about it someday."
"I am busy. I wouldn't have time."
"But, Mr. Harlan, surely you could find time someday."
She smiled at him. Harlan said in a desperate whisper,
"Will you pass, please? Or will you stand aside to let me pass? Please."
She moved by with a slow swing of her hips that brought blood tingling to his embarrassed cheeks. He was angry at her for embarrassing him, angry at himself for being embarrassed, and angry, most of all, for some obscure reason, at Finge. Finge called him in at the end of 2 weeks. On his desk was a sheet of perforated flimsy, the length and intricacy of which told Harlan at once that this concerned no half-hour excursion into time. Finge said,
"Would you sit down, Harlan,
and scan this thing right now?" "No, not by eye. Use the machine." Harlan lifted indifferent eyebrows and inserted the sheet carefully between the lips of the scanner on Finge's desk. Slowly, it passed into the intestines of the machine and, as it did so, the perforation pattern was translated into words that appeared on the cloudy white rectangle that was the visual attachment. Somewhere about midpoint, Harlan's hand shot out and disconnected the scanner. He yanked the flimsy out with a force that tore its tough cellulite structure. Finge said calmly,
"I have another copy."
But Harlan was holding the remnants between thumb and forefinger as though it might explode. "Computer Finge, there is some mistake. Surely I am not to be expected to use the home of this woman as base for a near week stay in time." The computer pursed his lips.
"Why not? If the spatio-temporal requirements are such. If there is a personal problem involved between yourself and Miss Lamp—"
"No personal problem at all," interposed Harlan hotly.
"Some kind of problem, certainly. In the circumstances, I will go as far as to explain certain aspects of the observational problem. This is not to be taken as a precedent, of course."
Harlan sat, motionless. He was thinking hard and fast. Ordinarily, professional pride would have forced Harlan to disdain explanation. An observer, or technician, for that matter, did his job without question, and ordinarily a computer would never dream of offering explanation. Here, however, was something unusual. Harlan had complained concerning the girl, the so-called secretary. Finge was afraid the complaint might go further. "The guilty fleeth when no man pursueth," thought Harlan with grim satisfaction, and tried to remember where he had read that phrase. Finge's strategy was obvious, therefore. By stationing Harlan in the woman's dwelling place, he would be ready to make counter-accusations if matters went far enough. Harlan's value as a witness against him would be destroyed. And, of course, he would have to have some specious explanation for placing Harlan in such a place, and this would be it. Harlan listened with barely hidden contempt.
Finge said, "As you know, the various centuries are aware of the existence of eternity. They know that we supervise intertemporal trade. They consider that to be our chief function, which is good. They have a dim knowledge that we are also here to prevent catastrophe from striking mankind. That is more a superstition than anything else, but it is more or less correct, and good, too. We supply the generations with a mass father image and a certain feeling of security. You see all that, don't you?"
Harlan thought, Does the man think I'm still a cub? But he nodded briefly. Finge went on.
There are some things, however, they must not know. Prime among them, of course, is the manner in which we alter reality when necessary. The insecurity such knowledge would arouse would be most harmful. It is always necessary to breed out of reality any factors that might lead to such knowledge, and we have never been troubled with it. However, there are always other undesirable beliefs about eternity which spring up from time to time in one century or another. Usually the dangerous beliefs are those which concentrate particularly in the ruling classes of an era, the classes that have most contact with us and at the same time carry the important weight of what is called public opinion. Finge paused as though he expected Harlan to offer some comment or ask some question. Harlan did neither. Finge continued. Ever since the reality change, 433 to 486, serial number F2, which took place about a year, a physio year ago, there has been evidence of the bringing into reality of such an undesirable belief. I have come to certain conclusions about the nature of that belief and have presented them to the All-When Council. The Council is reluctant to accept them, since they depend upon the realization of an alternate in the computing pattern of an extremely low probability. Before acting on my recommendation, they insist on confirmation by direct observation. It's a most delicate job, which is why I recalled you, and why Computer Twistle allowed you to be recalled. Another thing I did was to locate a member of the current aristocracy who thought it would be thrilling or exciting to work in eternity. I placed her in this office and kept her under close observation to see if she were suitable for our purpose. Harlan thought, close observation, yes. Again, his anger focused itself on Finge rather than upon the woman. Finge was still speaking. By all standards, she is suitable. We will now return her to her time. Using her dwelling as a base, you will be able to study the social life of her circle. Do you understand now the reason I had the girl here and the reason I want you in her house? Harlan said with an almost open irony, I understand quite well, I assure you. Then you will accept this mission. Harlan left with the fire of battle burning inside his chest. Finge was not going to outsmart him. He was not going to make a fool of him. Surely it was that fire of battle, the determination to outwit Finge, that caused him to experience an eagerness, almost an exhilaration, at the thought of this next excursion into the 482nd. Surely it was nothing else.